Coming up next on Passion Struck.
The aura is simply the field around the body, just like the atom, the molecule. In my work, the organ, the meridian in traditional Chinese medicine, they have fields. Fields are part of life. They're scientifically proven. Why wouldn't we have a field? Why wouldn't your pet, animals, plants, living things have a field? They are already made of electromagnetic charge. So I take it to a science place.
Welcome to Passion Struck. Hi, I'm your host, John R. Miles. And on the show, we decipher the secrets, tips, and guidance of the world's most inspiring people and turn their wisdom into practical advice for you and those around you. Our mission is to help you unlock the power of intentionality so that you can become the best version of yourself. If you're new to the show, I offer advice and answer listener questions on Fridays. We have long-form interviews the rest of the week with guests ranging from astronauts to authors, CEOs, creators, innovators, scientists, military leaders, visionaries, and athletes. Now, let's go out there and become Passion Struck. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 475 of Passion Struck, consistently ranked the number one alternative health podcast. A heartfelt thank you to each and every one of you who return to the show every single week, eager to listen, learn, and to discover new ways to live better, to be better, and most importantly, to make a meaningful impact in the world. If you're new to the show, thank you so much for being here, or you simply want to introduce this to a friend or a family member, and we so appreciate it when you do that. We have episode starter packs, which are collections of our fans' favorite episodes that we organize into convenient topics that give any new listener a great way to get acclimated to everything we do here on the show. Either go to passionstruck.com/starterpacks or Spotify to get started. I am so excited to announce that my book Passion Struck won the best nonfiction book at the International Book Awards. It's also a winner at the Eric Hoffer Book Awards, the Best Minds Business Minds Book Awards, and it also received the Nonfiction Book Gold Medal. You can purchase it on Amazon or go to passionstruck.com. In case you missed my interviews from last week, they included James Ray, Monica Berg, and Dave Luniger. James is the visionary leader who transformed Ashley Stewart against all the odds, from his humble beginnings as a high school teacher to becoming the self-described least qualified CEO of a struggling fashion retailer. James's story is one of resilience, innovation, and the transformative power of kindness. In my inspiring conversation with Monica Berg, we dove into personal growth, overcoming fear, and finding true fulfillment. Discover how to unlock your potential and live a most intentional life. Lastly, I interviewed the legendary Dave Luniger, known for his incredible success as the co-founder of Remax. Dave joined me to discuss his new book, The Perfect 10, 10 Leadership Principles to Achieve True Independence, Extreme Wealth, and Huge Success. In this episode, we dive into Dave's remarkable journey, exploring the leadership principles that propelled him to the top of the real estate industry. And if you liked any of those previous episodes or today's, we would so appreciate you giving it a 5-star rating and review. They go such a long way in strengthening the Passion Struck community, where we can help more people to create an intentional life. And we and our guests love to hear your feedback. Today, we're diving into a topic that's close to my heart with someone who's a true expert in the field. Joining us is Amy Lee McCree, a holistic health expert, medical intuitive, and the author of the groundbreaking book, Aura Alchemy. Her insights into the spiritual science of auras are not only fascinating, but deeply transformative. For many years, I was a complete skeptic about things like auras. It all seemed a bit out there, until a traumatic brain injury unexpectedly opened my eyes, quite literally, to the vivid world of auras. This was a personal experience I've mostly kept to myself, but when I discovered Amy's work, I knew it was time to explore this phenomenon more deeply. Amy's latest book, Aura Alchemy, takes us on a profound journey into the colorful energy fields that surround each of us. With over 20 years of experience working with energy on a quantum level, Amy teaches us not just to see and interpret these auras, but how to elevate our energy frequencies to live a life fulfilled with harmony and abundance. Her work has been featured everywhere from Glamour to Forbes, and she's here today to help us understand how we can harness aura energy to enhance our intuition, connect with the universal flow of energy, and manifest our heart's desires. In our episode, Amy will share techniques for developing our clairvoyant and intuitive senses to perceive auras in new and expanded ways, opening our minds and hearts to the universal life force that binds us together. So let's get ready to transform our understanding of the world around us and tap into the power of auras. Thank you for choosing Passion Struck and choosing me to be your host and guide on your journey to creating an intentional life. Now, let that journey begin. Hi, I am absolutely thrilled today to have Amy Lee McCree on Passion Struck. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you, John. I'm so glad to be here.
I love to get these interviews started out by giving the audience tidbits of getting to know you. And as I was doing my research, I actually found that we both have something in common. When I was growing up, I experienced a traumatic brain injury when I was about 5 years old that led to several challenges. One of those was a severe learning disability, which made me feel quite different from my peers. And similarly, I read where you shared that you were diagnosed with learning disabilities during your school years. How did your experience with them shape your path towards this medical intuitive field that you found yourself in?
That's a great question. I was diagnosed with a lot of learning disabilities pretty young, and that was because of what was showing up for me in school. Like, I would go to learn cursive. I know they don't learn cursive anymore, but I would go to write in cursive and the letter would take up the whole page. I couldn't make it any smaller. So luckily, I have wonderful parents and they did have me tested and discover I had a bunch of different learning disabilities. And I think that it was hard in school in some ways, obviously, things like that. I absolutely felt different. And I also felt like the world was hard to process. I had a little bit of what was called a processing delay. So sometimes it would feel like the world was just swirl or just not exactly overwhelming, but just hard to process and understand. But at the same time, I've always been very imaginative. I've always been very interested in science and math, and so voraciously reading. I think that in the younger years of school, it was challenging. As I got older and I began to explore shamanism and get working in my eventually in my medical intuitive path after meeting my medicine teacher while I was in college, my late medicine teacher, I started to understand that part of why I have the propensities and gifts that I have that are intuitive, although I think everybody can do this work, is because I would say to myself, I have a weird brain. I have a brain that some things are a little bit different. So now if we fast forward 23 years as a medical intuitive, I've learned to take, like, from the ADHD side of things, our prefrontal cortex can tend to be underactive in an ADHD setting, especially like when I was in high school in classes like US history, and I like physically couldn't stay awake because my prefrontal cortex was just like totally in its lowest state. But because of that, I've learned what I think happens for me is that underactivity is perhaps present a bit, but then the ADHD ability to hyperfocus allows me to take my shamanic vision down to a really small point and be essentially like extra successful in accomplishing whatever intention, which in the case of medical intuitive work includes looking really deeply on a subatomic level into the body. So I know it's a long answer, but although it was challenging in some ways in childhood, now I think I've learned to make it my superpower.
That's interesting. I developed an auditory processing disorder, so I get completely what you're saying. And my daughter has a sensory processing disorder that she has had to learn to navigate. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to see the modalities that they used on her to help her with that as well.
I was going to say, as an adult, as I began to learn about my brain, learn to optimize my brain, I've used many tactics from supplements, hyperbaric oxygen, and I've had some brain injuries too as an adult, just being spatially not tuned in. But the thing that I think really took it to superpower status was neurofeedback. And I learned how to train my brain and optimize my brain too.
Since you brought up HBOT, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, I had my friend Dr. Scott Schur on the show a while back, who's one of the pioneers in doing this. When you use that modality, what changes did you see after its use?
So I used HBOT specifically after bumping my head. When I was in my 20s, I had two instances where I bumped my head. The first one, I was putting on a psychic fair in my town in New England, and I borrowed some tents or something from my friends who owned a rock and mineral store. And I went into their deep basement, I had a hat on, and I really nailed the top of my head bad. And there's still a bump there from it. I don't know, 25 years later now. And then after that, I had another instance where I hit my head. I didn't know about any of this back then. So I had to really, it took a long time for it to heal. Then in my early 40s again, just in the last five-ish years, I had two instances during 2020. Same thing, I had a hat on, hit the head in the same place. And that's when I, so many years later, researched, took every supplement I could, and I did HBOT for it. I felt like it did help with recovery, and that's where I was going, was oxygenating the brain and optimizing recovery. From some of the work that I do in traditional Chinese medicine too, there's some elements of hitting the head that have to do with these divergent channels. And so I was also working with these divergent channel issues and consciously moving them. I felt like the HBOT helped me do that. Like sometimes when I'd be in it, it would move because the brain would be getting extra oxygen and it would be able to heal, and then the energy would move.
It's really interesting because Scott tells me that so many of the academic elite or the Silicon Valley elite actually have these in their house and use them on a daily basis. So it's an interesting element of alternative health that I've come to want to study more.
My understanding is when we're not using it for recovery, there are times when it can cause oxidative stress. So I feel like it's great when we're healing from illness, we're healing from TBI, we have reasons to use it. But I did feel too, for me to use it regularly, I wasn't sure if that would be good or not for my body. So I think everybody's different too.
So this leads me into this fascinating career that you've had as a medical intuitive. And I'm sure throughout the past two decades you've been doing it, you've witnessed numerous unique healing journeys. Yeah. Is there a particularly memorable story that stands out to you?
Well, there's a neat story super early in my career, but a little bit early. I think it was maybe 2007, 2008. And I started working with my late medicine teacher when I was 18, when I was in college. And then by the time I was 23, I started seeing clients and doing this work. I didn't call it medical intuitive healing yet. I was calling it multidimensional healing. As I got into the medical intuitive part, that was more like in that mid or early to mid 2000s. And then in 2008, I had this woman come in and she had really severe menstrual difficulties, like intense. And I saw or brought through this thing, and it was about unraveling a curse, her genetics. And we used a process that I actually still use this process today. It was something, it was a big learning moment for me. It's a protocol. And so we did it, and she started crying. This is when I see people in person, which I don't now, because everybody's scattered everywhere. But she said when she got her menses for the first time as a young woman, she was at her friend's and she felt really happy. And her friend's mom was really positive about it. And then she went home, and because of her mother's upbringing and I think some elements of the cultural tradition, when she was oh, I'm so excited, I started my menses, her mom slapped her across the face and said it was a curse. And it was really interesting because we saw in her, through her ancestral guides, she hadn't told me that, how there was a curse energy in her line. And we could really see and feel how that density was part of that tradition and shaped that experience. So after we did that protocol, she was a great success story because years and years later, I was still in touch with her and she had no symptoms whatsoever at any time in that department. So it helped me to see these things can work. And not that I didn't see that, but it was a real proof point for me as a healer that we can change our ancestral density, our genetics, our propensity, anything we want, we can change it within our body.
It's really interesting, since I started this podcast, how I've witnessed the interplay between energy, thoughts, emotions, and our physical health and how that plays out in so many ways. And that sounds like what you were just describing.
Yeah, big time.
So I've recently been doing a number of episodes around our inner narrative. And as I was researching you, you have an engaging concept, if I have it right, called watching the inner show, where you explore how our inner monologue can turn daily experiences into a dramatic narrative. Can you share more about this idea?
Yeah, I think from the standpoint of like self-reflection and contemplation, I like to go back to that inner witness. And when we step into that inner witness and watch the inner show, watch the personality self and even perhaps the higher self, like all the different elements of us at play from like a vantage point behind it, next to it, slightly outside of it, from a just a non-attached place, I think that can really bring us into deeper understanding around our motivation and our experience of the world. Because I think so much of what we do, say, the results we get in our lives is a result of how we see the world, our unique experience of being within this body, within this matrix of consciousness in our brain, like we were talking about, the way that we're having that experience. And when we can step outside and watch it, I think we can know ourselves better, which helps us to see our motivations, perhaps make more conscious choices, and also just not get so wrapped up in the chemicals and the thoughts and everything that is part of the human experience, which is beautiful, but also observe it. And so I tend to try to do that for myself regularly.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I, behind you, for those who have been watching, is a copy of Amy's book, but I'm also holding one here in my hand.
Yay.
And it's titled Aura Alchemy: Learn to Sense Energy Fields, Interpret the Color Spectrum, and Manifest Success. I think the most important question, maybe to start discussing your book, is for you to describe for the audience, what exactly are auras and why are they significant in holistic health and spiritual practices?
Good question. So I define auras as biologically generated electromagnetic fields made out of subatomic particles called photons that also comprise light and electricity. What that means is that we have photons, light, moving through us all the time. They are my Mediterranean gesturing of my hand, the thought, our automatic processes, everything is the result of the movement of photons or light through the body. The thing that's really neat about photons and electricity and electrical energy, if we look at, for example, a non-insulated copper wire and the light that flows like to the lamp, the electrons, which are like the medium for electricity, flow through the wire. The photons flow outside of the wire because they're actually electromagnetic force. They are an electromagnetic field while simultaneously being light. So all this movement of photons in our body creates all of these small fields around every muscle fiber, every nerve fiber, every cell, really, that's biologically enlivened by electricity, and then a composite electromagnetic field around us that seems to stretch out about 3 feet in all directions. Hence why auras are biologically generated electromagnetic fields. Now, why do we care? Why is this important? Because we are human projectors. And so the energy within us is projecting out of us and creating our reality. It goes through the lens of our aura. So if our aura is clean, clear, and perhaps tuned to an ultra high vibrational energy, then we can exponentialize our results of our personal human projector and create our life using the power of our aura as well as our inner energy as we choose.
And as I was reading the book, right at the beginning, you describe a childhood experience of playing in the yard, and you describe encountering what you called nature sparkles, I think is the word you use. Yeah. You think, looking back in hindsight, that was auras you were seeing?
I think that the nature sparkles were elementals of the spirits of nature, and I still see them. I've seen them my whole life, and I've shown them to people. You can see them, especially if you're out in nature, certainly in the dawn, dusk, in between times. They're there. And when you place your attention on them, usually they multiply, I think, because I think of it like the consciousness of nature. The thing I also did see at that time, we've played in our yard all the time. I would see the composite aura or field around the tree line, especially at dusk. So it'd be getting close to when my mom would call my brother and I in for dinner, and we'd be putting the Star Wars figures and the G.I. Joes and the dirt and, you know, digging and all the stuff we were doing, which I don't think kids do that as much now. And it's a tactilely satisfying thing. I think it makes so many dendritic connections and everything. But I did look a lot at that tree line, and I could feel the aliveness. I mean, you could anyway, but I could really feel the aliveness of the trees because I could see their, I used to think of it as their aliveness, but it was basically their aura.
Growing up as a kid, I just remember being outside constantly doing whatever exploration of the day we wanted to. And I remember my mom, especially as we got a little bit older, would just say, get home by the time it's dusk for dinner.
Yes.
And in my neighborhood, I'm not sure what yours is like. There are a bunch of kids in the neighborhood, but I never see them. And I think most of them are inside.
I know.
Playing on their iPad or whatever.
So. And then they're getting like carted around to sports or activities instead of like just being, which is just modern life for children now. Yeah.
Many of our listeners and viewers, including myself, I have to admit initially, are skeptical about the concept of auras. What would you say to someone who doubts their existence or importance?
I would say that everything is made of energy. When that's part of what I go into the book, I have a deep love of particle physics and I'm a science person. So when we look at the matter that we see and the air that we breathe, which is matter that we don't see, just because the photons, the light, don't bounce off those atoms in a spectrum that our eyes can detect. But when we think about our physical reality, it is made of matter, energy, force, and charge. That's scientific fact. This is an woo-woo concept. And it's mostly also made of empty space. And so as we tap into that understanding, if we just understand what in the book I call the tiny universe, we begin to understand, wow, we're made up of empty space. We're made up of light, which is force or charge. We're made up of matter and energy, which is the atoms and the building blocks, you would think. They all have a charge. They all have a field. Every particle is a particle. It's also a wave that can be described by mathematical wave function equations, as well as actually showing up as a wave. It's also the excitation of an infinite field. And so even a single atom in our skin, for example, is made of matter, energy, force, charge. It has its own field because it is a field. And you can think of it as this infinite matrix of intersecting fields. That's what we're made of. Everything is small on a smaller and smaller level. We begin to see it's the same. The aura is simply the field around the body, just like the atom, the molecule, in my work, the organ, the meridian in traditional Chinese medicine, they have fields. Fields are part of life. They're scientifically proven. Why wouldn't we have a field? Why wouldn't your pet, animals, plants, living things have a field? They are already made of electromagnetic charge. So I take it to a science place.
Okay. Well, I think even through my own research, I've realized that humans radiate a low level of electricity, forming, as you say, an electromagnetic field.
Yes.
And there are even ancient texts like the Vedas that describe these energies in seven layers, each linked to different aspects of our health. Mm-hmm. How do you see these different layers interacting with one another? And in your experience, do they influence our overall health and well-being?
I see our energy body and our aura as one. I mean, in the book, we just talk about the auras, but as a medical intuitive, I see that all is interwoven. I see the majority of it is constantly changing and mutable. So I've written a lot of books about chakras, which are the Vedic energy centers. In the Vedas and the Upanishads, we have everything from 1 to 144 chakras detailed. The seven chakra system was popularized by the Theosophical Society. I think all of these potential concepts provide things that could give us understanding. I think humans seek to understand. We seek to create structure around what could be the unknowable. I resonate a lot with the Taoist philosophy, and that looks acupressure, Chinese herbalism, traditional Chinese medicine, and the rivers of light that are the meridian systems. I think these all exist, and whatever we choose to focus on is a doorway through which we can optimize our health, our body, our life.
I think it's just so fascinating overall. So if we still have someone who's here who thinks that what you and I are discussing is crazy, how could someone who's listening or watching potentially take steps to start developing this ability of seeing an aura?
In the book, I take you through that from the absolute beginner level through all kinds of different activities. But something for someone who's really starting out, I would actually draw your attention to a really neat thing. I'm sure we've all experienced some kind of a, whether it's perplexing or not, non-physical connection. So you think of someone and they call. There's a coincidence that happens. What, and I tend to go to that point of, okay, so I think of someone and then they call me, and it's someone you're really tuned in with. What made that happen? There, Dean Radin, who's a parapsychologist, did some experiments on, are there telepathy particles? And I theorize those go back to those photons. So for someone who wants to see, sense, feel auras, it's really just about opening your mind. And almost like in the world of fiction, we say the reader willingly suspends their disbelief when they read your fiction book because they want to experience the story. So with an open mind, perhaps willingly let go of preconceived notions of just only the physical existing, because you already know that's not the case. You're breathing a gas that you can't see. There are many fields and things that you can't see. That's already proven. So what about letting go of that, realizing, okay, I have had these experiences where perhaps the particles of telepathy are at play. And as you do that, you can allow yourself to tune into how you might sense energy or the movement of energy. Some people it is a visual cue. Some people it is a sound. Some people it's words in their head. Some people it's a sense. Some people it's a taste. Some people it's kinesthetic. Some people it's an emotion. Some people it's an idea. For some people it's very visceral. As you open those senses, and I take you through that in the book, then you can look at your own aura using those senses. It doesn't have to be visual. You can start to feel into and sense your own aura. I also have you move in the book into the empty space in your aura and feel that spaciousness and begin to get an experiential sense of it. So you can feel how you're mostly empty space. So is everything else. So is your aura. And as you move into that, you can feel the interconnection of everything. So I think that's the starting point, is an open mind and interconnection and understanding that we're actually all connected to.
Amy, I purposely didn't want to tell you this before we began because I thought it would make the conversation more interesting. While I was in the military, I had a pretty severe traumatic brain injury,
mm-hmm.
lost consciousness and beyond. And following that and my healing from it, I began to see auras in my mid to late 20s.
Neat.
And it was something, as I said, I had been really skeptical about my entire life before that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever encountered other cases where physical changes or events have triggered similar abilities in people?
Yes. TBIs, absolutely. People who had near-death experiences too, like people who had surprising near-death experiences from like anaphylactic shock. And that's a one that's a pretty big one that I've seen multiple times over the years. Sometimes it's things where people have received an electrical shock too. I've seen it happen with that.
For me, it's something I've never talked about publicly. I've talked about it with some intimate partners mm-hmm. before, because I have always thought in my head, I don't want people to think I'm crazy.
What do you see? What was it like? And what does it still look like for you?
So a lot of it depends over time, I found, on my own emotional state, on how willing mm-hmm. I am to be a receptor. But when I am really mindful and tuned in, what I see is almost an outline of color around a person when I see mm-hmm. them, and then on different body parts, like their head, like their forehead, their heart, mm-hmm. other areas of their body, I can pick up colors as well. But for me mm-hmm. professionally, it was really interesting, because people would always say, you know how to read a person, or you know how to read a room. And for me, the colors I was seeing, I learned, because there wasn't a book for me to look at, I learned that they meant different things. So sometimes mm-hmm. I could see a color and it taught me that this person is a potential threat. Other times I would see a color like red and I felt it meant that this person was passionate or self-aware mm-hmm. or courageous. So the colors to me were things that I would use in the background, and it was, I considered, a superpower, because
mm-hmm.
it was something that I could see and other people couldn't. For instance, sometimes if I were presenting something and it was a project that involved risk, if I saw orange emanate from someone, I knew that person tended to be more creative or
mm-hmm.
more prone to risk taking. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know if these colors match up or not, but those are some of the things I would see. And then different parts of the body would have different things as well, depending on where you were looking. Does this match up to some of your...
In the book, I've got this huge... I'll show it for the YouTube people if I can find it. Say, auras are mutable, constantly changing. However, I made this gigantic medical intuitive aura color chart around what I see. And a lot of that's the same. Here it is. It's like, it's under more color meanings. So then.
Is it page 75?
Page 84.
Okay.
It's 6 pages of colors.
I have the advanced reader copy, so it's on page 70. So it's on 75.
Oh, yeah. That's why. Yeah. Yeah. Those match up. And I do think to some degree, the lens of our experience, like our own language, translates it. For me, yes, orange actually means creative and stuff like that too, but somebody else could mean something different. That's what I say. It's like, this isn't a hard and fast, this is the only way, but this is something to get people started. And we also have some charts about like the texture and the spatiality and what that means too, if you sense. That's really cool. So it is a superpower. And I've had to learn over the years to turn down the volume on some of that stuff, because I came in where everything like that was always coming at me, and I had to get more grounded and turn it off. If I go to the airport, I like seal up because there's so many people and they're all like frustrated and whatever. But it does help you in life read a room, certainly in work situations, in life situations. And that's part of what I take everybody through in the book, is how you can access that within yourself and the ways that you can use that ethically, of course, and consensually. So we're not like being nosy or anything. But we're, yeah, and just the more information we have, the more informed our decisions can be and the more we can understand.
I think that's a great jumping off point to a core part of your book, which is using the transformative power of owning one's personal energy.
Yes.
To boost your confidence and your own sense of personal responsibility. So my question on this mm-hmm. would be, how important is it for someone to master their own aura? Because I believe it can lead to them taking greater control of their life.
Absolutely. And owning your space, that's what I call it, like owning your personal space, owning your life, taking 100% responsibility for yourself as well. So it's energetic, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, every level means you can affect your life. You take full responsibility for your life. And then in the owning of your space, like somebody like me, who's the people use words like highly sensitive person, HSP or empath, when we own our space, we fill our bubble, our biofield, whatever you want to call our aura, and our being with our individual energy. And then we're not necessarily going to be as impacted and influenced by the energy of others. We can still let in the good, but we're owning our space. And it is very synonymous with the metaphor of boundaries. And I think we see that also when we own our space. We see that in our behavior and we see that in our relationships. If you think of people who have great boundaries, like as far as interpersonal relationships, they're probably owning the space of their aura. They're owning their personal power and they have a strong sense of their individual self, which I think we need as humans incarnated in duality. I'm going to go back to what you asked earlier. If we can have that and simultaneously have this inner witnessing side, that can be a great combination. But owning that space allows us to create the results we desire in this world.
So it sounds like what you're describing is that we can use auras to enhance our intuition.
Oh, yeah.
And can you give maybe a practical example for someone who's listening to this of how they might use their understanding of their aura to make better decisions or navigate challenges?
Yeah, let's think. So let's say that somebody is going into a situation, even just on the fly. They've been working with their aura. They've been sensing it, feeling it, perhaps cleaning it up, which we do a lot of that too in the book. And then they can use their conscious intention to infuse it with the charge or the energy or the thought forms of what they desire. So perhaps they're going into a work meeting with some colleagues who they don't always have the best results, and they could infuse their aura, their thoughts with joyful harmony. So they might use the words joyful harmony like a mantra. And so that's causing the movement of photons in the brain to have that flavor and that charge on some level. They can feel joyful harmony infusing the bubble around them. Then also they're owning their space at the same time. So they're really imbued and steeped in this essence of joyful harmony. And they're seeing it in a high vibrational way. So perhaps they're seeing it as like white light with swirls of light pink, because that's the harmony. That's a color palette that could work. They enter the meeting in that state. They've charged their aura, their mind, their body, their countenance with joyful harmony. And then the meeting may go a lot more joyfully and harmoniously because they've taken conscious ownership of what they can do with their field and their body and create the situation they desire.
So for those who are listening, what we are discussing today is Amy's book, Aura Alchemy. And what we've really been going through for the past 30 minutes or so are part one and part two of her book, which is really understanding energy fields, understanding that everything is alive, everything is interconnected and has building blocks. And then we've just been touching on how you observe auras and how to perceive other people's auras and some of the color aspects of it. And then we've just touched a little bit on part three of her book, which is the intuitive aspect of understanding auras. And in this third section, which is where you go into the different color meanings, one of the things that I found myself in observing auras is that every time you encounter a person, you don't necessarily see the same aura. Meaning I found that yes. they're mutable and constantly changing, which is something that you write about in the book, yes. because I think a lot of the aura depends on the emotional state of the person that you're observing. Can you talk a little bit more about that and why that's the case?
Well, I think our aura is that lens, that layer out from the inner projector. So the way that we're experiencing our consciousness and our reality is radiating through, it's enlivening our field, our body, also our thoughts. And then that will radiate out through that lens. And so from the outside perspective, when we're looking at the field of somebody, we will see, sense, feel that energy. The practical application of that is a lot less woo, is just gut feelings. Like when you see you're pumping gas and you sense the person who's swearing and throwing stuff over by their car and being weird, you can feel the chaos, the tension, perhaps the anger, the frustration. That's like a more ominous one, but you can get that information just from your gut feeling, your sensors. If you were to look at that aura, you might see chaotic energy. You might see discord. You might see density. You might see, if you're a color person, you might see colors that indicate that fiery discord. If you feel the sound of auras, you might hear like static and dissonance. You can tune in to more about a person. That's obviously like a safety issue thing, but you can tune into more about whomever you're connecting with and the state they're in, which it is their emotional state. It's the thoughts they're having. It's the experience they're having interacting with that which is outside of themselves as well, because I think that also influences our aura and our energy.
Amy, in part four of your book, you delve into various practices for cleansing electromagnetic fields, including mm-hmm. shamanic aura work, medical intuitive healing, specific energy clearing techniques. Can you elaborate on these just at a high level and what you found to be the most effective methods?
Yes. So a lot of the shamanic work that I do evolved into some of the medical intuitive work too. And I did have a medicine teacher. I was very fortunate to meet my late medicine teacher when I was 18 while I was in college. She trained me in an oral tradition in which she was trained by her teacher and so on and so forth. So I have this, some of that is foundational as far as the way that we extract and retrieve energy in a shamanic way. So we do some of that in the book. We also do a lot of medical intuitive inspired things. We do just every method you can pretty much think of to clean and optimize your aura. One of my favorites that's really easy to do, it's shamanic in nature, but it also pertains to traditional Chinese medicine, is salt cleansing. So you can use untreated sea salt. I recommend doing it, if you choose, maybe standing in your shower just so you don't make a mess. So you can take that untreated sea salt and really pour it over head, body, everything, use it as a scrub. Salt is cleansing. We use it in shamanic practice in a lot of different ways, in ritual and ceremony. Also, in traditional Chinese medicine, when we use salt in that way, what we do is bring what's called the Wei Qi, which is spelled W-E-I, to the surface. The Wei Qi is our external Qi, and it's actually part of our immune system in TCM. So if we do a salt cleansing, we take the Wei Qi to the surface, and it actually is an immune enhancer. We can use that for energetic cleansing. We can also use that if we feel we've been exposed to vibes, obviously, from a cleansing perspective, but also if we've been exposed to pathogens, we can use the salt to bring the Wei Qi to the surface and enhance our health. So it enhances our physical, emotional, mental, spiritual health through a really simple practice. So you just cover yourself in salt, like really pour it, just go for it. It also, for me, helps a headache. It helps the TBI heal. It brings the weight to the surface. Then you're in the shower, so the salt can just go down the drain. And if you have a lot of hair, you can rinse it and get it out. And you cleared your aura, really optimized your aura. And then you've also enhanced your immune function, your layer of your immune system, that Wei Qi. That's one of my favorites. And it's very easy.
So I think that's a great tip. Another thing I wanted to touch on was in your chapter on the medical intuitive healing was about vibration. And you write, the higher we raise our vibration, the better we feel, and the more high frequency energy we funnel into this dimension through our existence. And you go on to say, sometimes when people are seeking their life's purpose or dharma, the thing that I bring them back to is the higher your frequency is, then the higher the vibrational light you channel into this planet through your existence. And by doing so, the higher we raise the frequency of the planet, the better life will be on Earth, which I thought was really just a gripping passage. Can you just talk about that a little bit more?
One of the things I say in medical intuitive work is joy is the highest vibration in the known universe. And I see it as white light, often with gold sparkles. When we bring in, whether we want to call it joy, some people would like to call it love, you can call it whatever you want. When we choose to bring high vibrational energy into our body, our aura, our life, our affairs, we raise its frequency. That alone has a ripple effect, because then we are a funnel, a channel, a pillar of high vibrational energy, enhancing that which we encounter and perhaps enabling others to pattern with that and bringing more high frequency energy into the earth plane, into duality. The other thing that I think is really powerful in having that intention is picturing like a golden faucet up above your head, high up, huge golden faucet. You just turn that thing on, crank it to joy, and it's just a cascade of white light through your body, your aura, your field, your home, your property if you have it, your car, your life at all times. You leave that joy faucet on and you funnel high vibrational energy into this dimension through your conscious intention. That alone could be all of our dharma, to raise the frequency of humanity, the planet, at this time in the matrix of time, space, and thought. We can use our conscious intention to bring more high vibrational energy into this space.
Man, I love it, because this whole podcast is about how to live more intentionally. And I just wanted to point out to the audience that in addition, you also bring up herbal cleansing techniques, sound cleansing techniques, et cetera.
Yes.
And then obviously you already talked about the salt cleansing. In the next section of your book, part 5, you introduced the concept of neutrino aura manifestation. Can you explain what this involves and how it can be used?
I will. And I just want to thank John, and I have the same publisher, Hay House. Getting to write this book for Hay House and getting a platform to write about my theories and shamanic exploits with particle physics, this is one of those things. That is a key dharmic point for me. And it's also just lets me geek out on the fun of playing with science. So neutrino aura manifestation came to me in several shamanic journeys. And it's some of the concepts were things I was already using in my life and in teaching some of my clients and students. But then when I really put it together in the book, I was able to define it more. So this concept, we weave this great web in part 1 where we understand the tiny universe and all the particles. We talk about one of these many particles are neutrinos. Neutrinos are fermions, which means matter and energy. Those photons we talked about are bosons, which means force. So the difference between fermions and bosons in particle physics is bosons have no mass. Fermions have mass. Neutrinos were thought to be these bosons for a long time, but now we know they have a teeny tiny bit of mass. But it's so little they interact with almost no other particles. So in the nuclear fusion and fission reactions of our sun that releases the photons that are the light we see, there and many other sources in the universe and beyond, there are neutrinos being released, produced constantly. So much so that we exist in a constant cascade of neutrinos. Every second, 400 billion neutrinos are moving through our body. So we are in this just absolute deluge of these neutrino particles. And I've always been fascinated by them. I've experienced them in shamanic journey as being quirky and interesting. And I like to feel things like that, like they're personified. And so I was really excited to discover that with neutrinos that are moving through our field, specifically in our aura, constantly moving through, that we can use essentially the power of our thought, which is the movement of photons through the brain, through the body, which creates an electromagnetic field that goes out into our aura. We can use the power of our thought through essentially intention. I have us use short affirmative statements. I think in the book I have you use joyful wealth. Maybe I don't totally remember, but you can put anything in there. We use the intention to radiate out as a field and make a certain kind of contact with these neutrinos that are constantly moving through. What I was shown in Shamanic Journey was that when we do that with intention, we can tap into the neutrino and then very slightly shift what's called its angular momentum, which is how it spins. It's not classical spin. It's spin in different directions and different velocities. When we influence this angular momentum of the neutrino, we can bounce it out for a quick moment into a parallel reality that has a different makeup than here, where this neutrino particle, which is a quixotic interdimensional transcendent particle, can pick up a little more metaphorical but not literal bulk because we've bounced it out with intention. Then it comes back into our reality and it changes reality with our intention. So my guides with whom I journey told me in the beginning of this process, when neutrinos interact with thought, photons, intention, the direction of life can change. So it's a really powerful manifestation technique. And it takes us into that tiny universe. We can use our intention and have a direct influence on physical reality, even though the neutrinos are almost non-physical. They have such a small amount of mass that they're only able to be measured or detected by a physicist in deep subterranean tanks of metal. And they can just catch a little tiny trail of them and that's it. But we can influence them simply with the power of our thought.
So interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that. It was one of my favorite chapters in the book, which is why I wanted you to
talk about it. It's my favorite chapter in the whole book. Yeah.
So one of the things that I try to practice a lot is gratitude. And unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, my sister passed away. So I've gotten away from this gratitude practice that I need to get back into. But I think it's so important, at least for me, to start my day out with appreciation and gratitude and to also end it in that way. But you write that it also influences, it being appreciation and gratitude, the auric field. How do the emotions like gratitude impact aura, and how can a listener utilize them to positively transform their energy field?
Such a good question. Appreciation and gratitude are high vibrational feelings, concepts, experiences. So when we have those, we can, just through virtue of the frequency, be raising the frequency of our aura, our body, our life, our mind. We also know from all different types of law of attraction kind of thing that what we affirm proliferates. I always like say what we put our attention on proliferates, and everybody says that in different ways. So if we are affirming the things for which we're grateful, the things we appreciate, then we are magnetizing more of that. We know that, but if we were going to think about that from this idea of the movement of photons in the brain, the mind, the body, the field, the aura, we're charging those photons with appreciation, with gratitude. And then they're like swirling, bringing in more and more of that frequency, more of those good things for which we're grateful, that we're affirming, and charging our aura with that. And that goes back to what I talked about in the beginning, which is we're a human projector. So if our aura is charged up with all this great gratitude, appreciation, focus on the good things in our lives, frequency, it's going to magnify those thoughts from within the head, the body, the mind, the heart, magnify those out through the aura and draw in more and more of the same.
And then in the last section of the book, you delve into the dynamics of when auras interact.
Yes.
Can you explain what happens energetically when two or more auras come into contact and how it affects different people?
It's good. But all kinds of things. So we talk about, for example, the family aura. I have a degree in education. And so in my very early years, I was a teacher. And when I was teaching kindergarten and preschool, I would notice, I was also a nanny when you're putting your working through school and stuff like that. I would notice how typically in a idyllic, healthy, functional family, whether with a biological parents or close caregivers that assume a parental role, kids' auras are somewhat encompassed in one or both of the parent or caregiver's aura, usually up till around age 7. And then they start to differentiate out more. And it doesn't mean they don't go out, their little unit, their little kid bubble doesn't go out and do its own thing, but it's always held in an ideal situation, and not everybody had that. So that's something we go into more in the book, but that's one way where there's an interaction that can be really positive. If we go into a crowd, like a concert or an airport or things like that, we talk about how we might seal up, but we also, if we want to, can allow ourselves to be part of the group energy. Almost like, say we're at a concert, the whole crowd has its own composite aura. And perhaps that's being influenced by whatever their show they're seeing. So we can participate in that to the degree with which we choose if we're aware of it. We also talk about, like, in one-on-one or small group interactions, the way that auras do interact. Because imagine everybody has this field and they're interacting, even if we're at a distance or on the phone, whatever. Then when we actually in physical proximity and they intersect with each other, there is an opportunity for a co-mingling. And that's where those ideas of boundaries and energetic space can be useful if it's a situation that isn't as high frequency or an emotional experience that we like. And if it is, then we can allow the co-mingling and experience it, because really we all have views perhaps on what the point of life is, but part of the beauty of life can be the interaction, the love of a parent to a child, or the interaction between friends where they're really having this really wonderful conversation when they're having lunch and things like that, sitting at a table with each other and their auras are probably touching. When we hug somebody, auras are interconnecting, they're overlapping. And all of these intuitive senses we develop in the other parts of the book, and the cleaning and the clearing and the sensing, all of that can then be applied to these things that happen when auras interact.
Okay. And then in this section, I can't leave this topic without you talking about what happens to auras during intimate moments.
People love this topic. And when I wrote it, I thought that might happen, but I get interviewed about that now. And it's great. If people are in great, positive, consensual situations, then the consciousness of the aura can enhance those moments as well because of that overlapping. And then depending whether it's inclusive of whatever, intimacy is intimate. So things are overlapping physically and energetically. So that's why we have these opportunities for even greater connection, greater understanding, greater knowing of one another in those intimate moments, because the fields are overlapping, the energy is overlapping, So perhaps the movement of the photons in the mind and the body, which could be thoughts, emotions, etc., are resonating out into the field through the being, and we get to really tap into that on a deeper level with another person. It lets us know one another more deeply. It lets us experience that. And I think humans have a deep need to be known, to be seen, to be understood. It doesn't always happen in those situations, but during intimacy is one of the times where I think people get to feel that, even if they can't feel it through communication, conversation, etc. It provides a deeper bridge to that interconnection. And it also taps into that aliveness. Like I talked about how when I was a kid, I would see the aliveness of the tree line. You really are feeling the aliveness, and there is a connection to nature side of it. There's a perhaps like a more primal side where you feel innate aliveness of another person, which usually you just feel in yourself. I mean, you even feel that when you hug somebody like a little bit, but with intimacy, you really feel that. One of the many beautiful experiences life can provide as we bring conscious awareness to energy and experience, in my opinion.
Okay, and then finally, Amy, what's been the most rewarding part of your journey with auras, and what do you hope readers take away from the book?
For me, it's like the fun with particles and things like we talked about, the neutrino manifestation and getting to, I like to, in my medical intuitive work, I like to find, especially in tougher cases, I like to find the root cause. Like an archaeologist, like to dig down there and then use a brush and clean off the tablet and figure out what's going on. And with auras, that is a piece of that, because we can use them for influence and all of that. We can use them for the particle physics side, the manifestation. We can also know the self and catch things sometimes as they're coming, if they're externally generated, as they're coming in before they actually start to impact. So for me, that's rewarding too, as a medical intuitive. But personally, I just like playing with particles.
And Amy, if a listener or viewer wants to learn more about you, where's the best place for them to go?
My website, amyleemercree.com. And I'm also pretty active on Instagram, amyleemercree, just my name. Everywhere books are sold, you can find many of my books, or Alchemy is my 18th book, at journal, card deck, et cetera, et cetera. But so whatever interests them, they can find.
Well, thank you so much. It was such an honor to have you on today's show.
Thank you so much. You asked such great questions and we had such a great chat. It was wonderful.
What an incredible honor that was to interview Amy Lee McCurry. And I wanted to thank Hay House and Amy for the honor and privilege of joining us here today. Links to all things Amy will be in the show notes at passionstruck.com. Please use our website links if you purchase any of the books from the guests that we feature here on the show. Videos are on YouTube at our main channel at John R. Miles and our Clips channel at Passionstruck Clips. Please go check it out, subscribe, and join over 250,000 other subscribers. Advertiser deals and discount codes are in one convenient place at passionstruck.com/deals. Please consider supporting those who support the show. I'm at John R. Miles on Twitter, TikTok, LinkedIn, Instagram, where I post daily bits of inspiration. And if you want to express your courage muscles, then sign up for our weekly newsletter titled Live Intentionally, where we create a weekly courage exercise to help you expand your journey to growing intentionally. Are you curious to find out where you stand on the path to becoming passion struck? Then dive into our engaging Passion Struck quiz, which is crafted to reflect the core principles from my latest book, Passion Struck. The quiz offers you a dynamic way to gauge where you sit on your journey to becoming passion struck. It takes just about 10 minutes to complete. Sign up at passionstruck.com. You're about to hear a preview of the Passion Struck podcast interview that I did with Dr. Peter Yesowicz, the co-author of the groundbreaking book, Hospitable Healthcare, which explores a revolutionary idea. What if healthcare providers served patients with the same dedication and care as hospitality provides in hotels and restaurants? In our interview, Peter reveals the secrets from the hospitality industry and how that can transform healthcare. We delve into his innovative payer model, which stands for prepare, anticipate, engage, evaluate, and reward, and discuss how it addresses the current trends in healthcare.
In the marketing world, There's a tremendous amount of focus over the last 25, 30 years in customer relationship management. Generally, that doesn't exist in healthcare. It certainly doesn't exist in most of those individual practices because the records are primary clinical. But things like, well, here comes John, and we know that John has already told us that he can't have an appointment with us on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, okay, because he has other obligations at work, whatever. Well, we don't need to ask him that question every time he calls for an appointment. We should know that. That should be in the system that says John doesn't want Tuesdays and Wednesdays, or it would be time of day, or we know that John needs some assistance with transportation, or we know all those kinds of things. We should know those things. And as it turns out, all of that information is generally exchanged in some fashion between the patient and the provider. It's just not captured.
Remember that we rise by lifting others, so share the show with those that you love and care about. And if you found today's episode useful, then definitely share it with someone who could use the advice that Amy gave on today's show. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so that you can live what you listen. Until next time, go out there and become passion struck.